You're listening to a UC San Diego podcast.
So if your last name starts with a letter from A to L, then the exam room is here. So Central Hall 212 is this room. Otherwise, you have to go to Central Hall 216 for the midterm on Tuesday. And also Monday lecture is going to be a review session. So on Monday, we're going to see a review for midterm one. There's not going to be a lecture. Any question? And the exam policy is posted online, so you're allowed to bring a calculator. Yeah, you can bring a sheet of notes, normal size, right? Don't bring a poster or anything, just a normal. Hey. You can, yeah. You're allowed to bring calculator, yeah. Bring calculators. Sorry? Yeah, normal calculator. You're not going to need a calculator. Just so the same way for quiz one question, you had to add a bunch of numbers. Even if you didn't add, we're still going to give you full mark. So, yeah. So now you're not going to lose mark for not bringing a calculator. Right. So, what are we talking about? Section 6.4. So I'm going to be talking about second fundamental theorem of calculus. You have already seen the first one. So the complete statement is in your book, but basically what it says is that the derivative of the integral of f of t is just, so if f is continuous on an interval, so the details on your book, but that's what it says. So f is continuous on the interval, and a is in the interval. So basically what it says is that derivative and integral, they cancel out, right? So it says that the derivative is the inverse of integral. If you take integral first, and then you take the derivative, you get f back. So just note that this is a function of x, right? So let's just see an example. Integral from 1 to x of t squared dt. This integral is not a function of t, right? It's a function of x. And you can check that. So if I, the antiderivative is t cubed over 3. And then from 1 to x, I'm going to get x cubed over 3 minus 1 over 3, right? So this is a function of x. So t squared antiderivative is t cubed over 3, and then from 1 to x, if I plug in x first and then minus, I plug in 1. So I'm going to get this function. So this is a function of x, right? So this right-hand side, this is t, but so that's why I put t here, because this is t and this is x. So what matters here is x. This is a function of x. And if you take the derivative with respect to x, you're going to get f back. And then you can check. If I take the derivative of this, so this means that derivative of this integral so that's derivative of this, right? Derivative of that is that's this, so the derivative of this with respect to x is x squared, right? So that's just checks this for this example. So if I take the derivative of integral of t squared, I'm going to get x squared. And that's an example illustrating this. So the derivative of integral of f is f itself. Any question? So, so what was the first fundamental theorem of calculus? You have already seen fundamental theorem of calculus before. So the first fundamental theorem of calculus that we saw before was this, right? It was integral of, so it was this. If f prime of x is fx. So this is first fundamental theorem of calculus. Then integral of fx dx from a to b is f of b minus f of a. So that was the first, so this is the first fundamental theorem of calculus, right? That we saw before. So now, little f is the derivative of capital F, right? So I can write this as so little f of x is f prime of x. So I can write it like that, right? So the first fundamental theorem of calculus tells you that the integral of the derivative of f is f itself. So this is telling you that the integral of derivative, they cancel out. This is the derivative of integral. So the first fundamental theorem of calculus is telling you that the integral of derivative is the function itself. This tells you that the derivative of the integral is the function itself. So both of them are telling you that derivative of integral are like inverse of each other, right? They cancel out. Any question? Yeah. How did I compare what? So this is, I'm just saying this is integral of derivative and that's derivative of integral and they cancel out. So this is, the exact formula is this, right? This is the exact thing that you need to know. And this is the exact thing. I just said what it means intuitively. It means that they are inverse of each other. But this is exactly, this is exact. This is the formula. And this is for the first fundamental theorem of calculus, that's for second fundamental theorem. I mean, there are details. I mean, f has to be continuous, and I didn't mention that. And but the details are in your book. So here, f is continuous, and a f is continuous on some interval, and a is in that interval. But yeah, but always we consider a continuous function. So. So note that here, this A doesn't matter, right? If I change this A to any other constant, this is again f of x. So let's see an example. Sorry, this is T. Right. So the important variable is x, right? It's not T. So this function is a function of x. You take the integral from this number to that number, so it's going to be in terms of x. That's how we saw it here, right? So what is the derivative? So what's the derivative of f? What is f prime of x? I want to use the second fundamental theorem of calculus. Then how can I find this? This derivative. So this is exactly this, right? So the derivative is just f. So I'm using this. So derivative of integral of f is just f. So this is f prime of x means the derivative of f, means the derivative of the integral, and they cancel out. So I just get this. But I have to replace t by x. So this is a function. So that's e to the x plus 2 sine x cubed. Okay. Any question? Yeah. This is a function of x. Yeah. Yeah. So whatever you have here is going to be a function of that. So, yeah. So far, I just gave you examples for the upper limit. But I'm going to give you other examples for lower limit. Yeah. So this is a stated, when this is a constant, and this is x. That's how it's stated. But using this, we can do other, I'm going to do other examples that more complicated. Okay. So, yeah. Any other question? So the other thing I want to emphasize is that this minus 1 doesn't matter, right? I can change that minus 1 to whatever and still the answer is the same. So this doesn't matter. And you can see why it doesn't matter. Why that minus 1, let's say I have integral from, instead of minus 1, I have any other number. Let's say 3. The same thing. And let's call that g of x. So this is another function. So e of t plus 2 sine 2t. Derivative of this is still the same. Derivative is still this. Why? You can use the fundamental theorem of calculus, but you can see why. Because I can write this as, so f of x is what? Is that, right? It's integral from minus 1 to x. That's f of x. I can write that as integral from minus 1 to 3 plus integral from 3 to x. Right? So that's the property of integral from minus 1 to x. I can break it down and then write as from minus 1 to 3 and then plus 3 to x. That's the same thing, right? So this is just g of x, right? So f of x is equal to this plus, this is g of x. So f of x is equal to this plus g of x. But what is this? This is a definite integral. Integral from minus 1 to 3. That's a number, right? Integral from minus 1 to 3 means the area under this curve from minus 1 to 3. That's a number. That's a constant, right? Whatever it is, it's a number. It doesn't depend on x. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't depend on x. So the derivative of this, whatever it is 0 because it's a constant number. So derivative of this is 0. So derivative of f is equal to 0 plus derivative of g, right? So f prime of x is equal to 0 plus g prime of x. So f prime of x and g prime of x are equal, and that's what we expect because of the fundamental theorem of calculus. So the lower limit doesn't matter. Whatever number you choose, the derivative is the same. Any question? Now back to your question. Your question was, what if the lower limit depends on x and the upper limit doesn't, right? Then what do we do? So how do we find the derivative of, let's say, the integral from 2 to x, I mean x to 2, of, let's say, cosine of x dA, cosine of t dt. So to use the fundamental theorem of calculus, I need to have it in the form that the lower limit is a constant and the upper limit doesn't depend. I mean, the upper limit is x. So, but I can do that, right? So I know that this is the same as, by definition, that term is just minus integral from 2 to x. If I change the order, then just I have to multiply by minus 1. Right? So that's how we defined. So integral from b to a is minus integral from a to b. And that's what we're using here. And now I can use the fundamental theorem of calculus, right? After I do that, then I can use, this is minus, and this is exactly in the form that I want. This is a constant, this is x, so this is minus cosine x. Any question? Yeah. I'm finding the derivative of integral. I'm using the fundamental theorem of calculus. The derivative of integral of f is f. That's the second fundamental theorem of calculus that I wrote in the beginning of the class. Yes. So derivative of integral, they cancel out. All you get is this. Yeah. Sorry? Mm-hmm. This negative sign? This is negative 1, right? This means negative 1 times this. Negative 1 is a constant number, and derivative has this property that a constant number, you can bring it out of the derivative, right? I'm using that property. So I'm using this property that derivative of, let's say, 2fx is 2 times derivative of fx. I'm using this property. In this case, 2 is, instead of 2, I have minus 1, right? So instead of 2, you can have minus 1. Minus 1 times fx. So whatever constant number you have, you can bring it out. So that's minus 1 times the derivative of fx. So I'm using that property here. This is derivative of minus 1 times that. Minus 1, I can bring it out. That's a constant number. Any other question? So, let's see. Okay, let's make it even more complicated. What's the integral from 1 to x cubed? Instead of x, I have x cubed. I mean the derivative of this integral. I want to find the derivative of this integral of, let's say, sine t plus t squared dt. So again, I want to use the second fundamental theorem of calculus, but to use that, I need x here, right? I have x cubed, so I have to do something about it. I don't have x, I have x cubed. So what I can do is I can write this as a composite function, and then I use the chain rule. So that's what I'm going to do. So I have two functions. And this is a composite function, and then I use the chain rule to find the derivative. So how? This is x cubed. This is a function of x, right? This is a function of x. Let's just call that function gx. Right? And then I have, let's call this function fx or hx. The function, I just write that as 1 to x. But that's what I want, right? I want x here. Then I know how to find the derivative. So define g and h this way. Then this function, I mean, this integral from 1 to x cubed is a composite function. That's exactly, so then that function, integral from 1 to x cubed of sine t plus t squared dt, this is exactly h of g. Right? H of g of x is that function. Because this means h of x cubed, right? H of x cubed means in h, instead of x, put x cubed. And that's exactly what I have. So So this is a composite function. And now I use the, for composite function, we can use the chain rule to find the derivative, right? So using the chain rule, the derivative of, so dd, we know that the derivative, I'll write it here. So the derivative of h of g of x, so that's the chain rule, is equal to the h prime at gx. So that's the chain rule that you had before, right? That's how you find the derivative of a composite function. Any questions so far? So this means that now I can find the derivative because I know what is h prime. H prime, I can just use the fundamental theorem of calculus, right? So this is equal to, what is h prime? I just use the fundamental theorem of calculus. This is sine x plus x squared, right? H prime is sine x plus x squared. But I don't want h prime of x. I want h prime of g of x. So after you find h prime, you have to replace x by g of x. And g of x is x cubed. So I have to replace x by x cubed. So that's sine of x cubed plus x cubed squared, which is x to the 6th, right? So that's h prime of g of x times g prime of x. And g prime of x is the derivative of this, which is 3x squared. So that's the derivative. Any question? So this is the same thing. This is a composite function, and I'm going to do the same thing. I don't want to write everything again, so I do exactly the same thing. I'm going to get the derivative of this. So instead of t, I have to put sine of x. That's h prime of g of x. So instead of this, I put sine of x. And then derivative of sine of x. Derivative of sine of x is cosine of x. Right. So instead of t, you put whatever you have here and then multiply by derivative of that. We did exactly the same thing over here, right? Instead of t, I put x cube. Instead of t, I put x cube, and then times derivative of x cube, which is 3x squared. If you had from sine x to 0, then you can change it first, put a minus sign, right? Okay, I know what you mean. I'll give an example of what you're saying. That's a good question. So her question is, so far, we always have one of them is a constant, one of them is a function of x. What if both of them are functions of x, right? It can happen. And then how, what we do? It doesn't matter which one is constant. If it's from sine x to 0, we do exactly what I did before. Just put a minus sign. So if it's from sine x to 0, you just change that first and then do this, right? You do this first and then find the derivative. But what if both of them are functions of x? Then that's not the, then I can't do any of these. So let's see another example. How do I find the derivative of integral from, let's say, x squared to sine x e to the t dt? So now both lower limit and upper limits are functions of x. So I have to do something else, right? So to use the fundamental theorem of calculus, I need one of them to be a constant. Otherwise, I don't know how to find it. So if I want one of them to be a constant, what can I do? I can do this. So again, I can break it down. I can write it from x squared to whatever constant you want, let's say 0, e to the t dt, plus integral from 0 to sine x e to the t dt. Right? I can break it down into two integrals. It doesn't matter 0. You can put 1 and then 1, right? Just a constant. Well, I want this to be a constant. But whatever this is, this must be the same thing. So if this is 0, this must be 0. And now I can find the integral, right? And now I have two integrals. Each one of them, one of the limits is a constant. So I can use the fundamental theorem of calculus to find this integral. So this is the first one. I have to change the limits first because this is the lower limit is in terms of x. Minus. So I change the limits first. I write that 0 to x squared e to the t dt. I put a minus sign here. And then plus. Right. So I want the lower limit to be constant, the upper limit to be in terms of x. That's why I changed the limits. And now I can find the integral using the chain rule again. This is minus. Using the chain rule, instead of t, I put x squared. So that's e to the x squared. Derivative of x squared is 2x. So that's the derivative of the first integral. And then plus, derivative of the second integral, instead of t, I put sine x. And then derivative of sine x is cosine x. So that's the derivative. Any questions? I think that's enough example for this, if there's no other question. Yeah. So now I think whatever you have, you can find the integral. You can find the derivative. So let's consider this. Write an expression for let's say you know that f prime of x is this, and you know f of 0 is 5. then I want to write an expression for F. So I can write F is so integral of derivative. So that's the first fundamental theorem of calculus, right? So first fundamental is integral of derivative is F. So integral of F prime x dx, let's make it t, f prime t dt from 0 to x is equal to f of x minus f of 0. So this could be a little confusing. I usually used capital F for. So what I usually use capital F, I'm using little f here, right? I'm using little f, but usually I use capital F when I have antiderivative. So here, little f is antiderivative. I usually use capital F for antiderivative, but in this case, I'm using little f. Right? You can change little f to capital F, but all, and then that's, yeah. That's just the name. So this is the first fundamental theorem of calculus, right? And so I can say that, so fx is equal to f of 0 plus integral from 0 to x, f prime x. I know what f prime x is. F prime t, that's the e to the t plus t squared dt. So that's an expression for f. In this case, finding this integral is easy. Right, I can find this integral. But it's not the case always. So most functions, it's not possible to find their integral. Finding integral in general is hard. For most functions, so when we find the integral, we write the integral as the functions we know. The functions we know are sine, cosine, polynomials, e to the t, ln. So those are the functions we know. But in most cases, it's not possible to write an integral in terms of the functions we know. So finding an integral in general is not possible. In this case, it is. But if it's not possible, we can just leave it like that. This is good enough. This is an expression for f. So for example, we cannot find this integral. It's not possible to write a function that when you take the derivative, you get this. In terms of the functions we know, elementary functions. So, yeah. So, so another function that your function gives a name to that is called psi x is defined as it's not possible to find this integral. You just call this psi x. So when I say psi x, I mean this is the function. This is a function in terms of x, right? This is a function of x. So I cannot find the indefinite integral in general, but I can find a definite integral. You can always, so let's say I can find psi of 1. Because then this is a definite integral from 0 to 1. You can always use numerical methods to find an approximation. You can use, for example, you can use Riemann sum, right? You can use Riemann sum when n is large, and then you get a good approximation.
So it's not possible to exactly know what this function is, but for each point, you can use approximations to find this integral. You can use, for example, Riemann sums. Riemann sums gives you good approximations if n is big. So you can say approximately what is psi of 1, what is... So it's called sine integral in your book. So sine integral of 1, sine integral of 2, you can find them, you can approximate them using Riemann sums. Right? Okay. Any question? So this is a function. You don't need to exactly write it. You can... When you say write an expression, you can just leave it like that if you can't find this integral. In most cases, in this case, you can find this integral, but in a lot of cases, you cannot. So let's see. Example. So the graph of f... little f, graph of f, let's say this is 0. This is 1, this is 2, this is 3, let's say this is 4, and let's say this is 6. So this is t, and this is f of t. So let g of x, so this is another function that's defined as integral from 0 to x, ft dt. So g of x is defined as the integral of x, integral of f from 0 to x. Find the maximum of G. So how do I find the maximum of G? I want to add the points. You cannot find the maximum, but you can just find the points at which the maximum occurs. So find the points at which the maximum of G occurs. Find the points
with this information. You cannot find the maximum. Find the points at which the maximum of G occurs. So G is the integral from 0 to x of f. So if you start from 0 and then you find the integral, so what is, for example, what is G of 0? G of 0 means integral from 0 to 0. That's 0, right? Integral from a to a is always 0. So g of 0 is integral from 0 to 0, so g of 0 is 0. And then after that, what is g of 1, for example? G of 1 is the integral from 0 to 1, so g of 1 is this area, right? G of 1 is the area from 0 to 1. So that would be that area. So that's g of 1. G of, let's say, 0.5 is this area. Is smaller, right? G of 0.5 is smaller than g of 1 because that's this small area. G of 1 is this big area. And then g of 1.5 is this area. So this area is getting bigger and bigger. So g is getting bigger and bigger. G of 2 is this whole area. So that's the largest, right? G of 2 is the largest so far because that's the whole area. After that, it's going to decrease again. G of this is this whole area minus, this is below the x-axis. So after 2, it's going to decrease. Always it's going to decrease. So g of 2 is, so 2 is the maximum. So the answer is 2. Right? Because that's this whole area. So g is defined this way. G is defined as the integral from 0 to x. So g of 2 is this area, but then after that, it's going to decrease. So that's one way to see that. Another way to see that is, so the maximum of g occurs, I'm sure you have seen it before, maximum occurs when the derivative is 0, right? I think you had it in before that. Not in this lecture, but so that's the maximum occurs when the derivative is 0. So what is derivative of g? Derivative of g is the derivative of integral. Derivative of g is f, right? So derivative of g is f by fundamental theorem of calculus. That's the derivative of integral. So f is the derivative. So maximum occurs when the derivative is 0 and 2. F of 2 is 0. So derivative is 0 at 2. So that's maximum has to be 2. It could be 0 or 6. So one of them is the maximum. In this case, 2. So the point that maximum occurs must be the point that derivative is 0. F is 0. This is a graph of F. F is 0 at these three points. In this case, it's 2. So, so we can ask, in what interval or intervals, G is concave down? That's another question. So G is concave down. That means that the second derivative is negative, right? Concave down means the second derivative is negative. The second derivative of g means the first derivative of f, right? So g, the second derivative of g, is the same as the first derivative of f because g prime is f, right? G prime is f, so g double prime is f prime. So now, I want to know when g double prime is negative. So it means that when f prime is negative. F prime is negative means that, so this is f. I already have f. F prime being negative means that f is decreasing. So when f is decreasing, f is increasing here, right? It's increasing. After 1, it's decreasing up to 4. From 1 to 4, it's decreasing. So that the answer is 1 to 4. That's the interval where f is decreasing. F being decreasing means that f prime is negative. F prime is negative means that g double prime is negative. G double prime negative means that g is concave down. 1, 2, 4, sorry? It doesn't really matter, closed or open. The interval, yeah, you can put it closed. It does, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That's F. I'm talking about G. I want to know.
This has been a UC San Diego podcast. For more, visit podcast.ucsd.edu.